You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
If you give money to somebody above $15,000 a year, somebody's got to pay the gift tax on that. Did Joe Biden pay that money? Did he claim that money on his income? No. If you look at the tax returns, his financial disclosures, he did not. So this gets messy real fast. And the question, Jesse, becomes, does Hunter Biden become the sacrificial lamb? Does he end up taking a plea deal that might even mean jail time in order to protect his father?
Wow. This is March 24, 2022. We are not live streaming at Larry Connors USA YouTube. Larry Connors USA YouTube, still not live streaming because YouTube has still shut us down. And of course, Twitter shut down the Babylonian Bee, Babylon Bee, because they didn't like something they said. It's constant cancel. But nevertheless, we continue. The remarks you were just hearing from Peter Schweitzer, author of the book Red Handed. And he says, Joe Biden getting money from Hunter, who got it from Russia and Chinese connections, all of them linked to the highest levels of government. And there's always been an obvious question, if it happened like that, and Joe Biden took that kind of money from Hunter, who got it from the highest levels of government in Russia and China, is our president compromised? Subject to blackmail and everything else? Well, that question doesn't go away. But there's the other issue. Criminal charges of hiding money. Team Biden, as Schweitzer calls them, apparently realizing that Hunter Biden is about to be indicted. So Team Biden helping the New York Times in a story that, as you know, came out the other day and finally admitted, oh yeah, that Hunter Biden laptop that we denied and ignored going into the election, it's real. But they didn't do it at the very top. They buried that, but they had a lot of other information that obviously had to come from inside so-called Team Biden. We're going to have more on this story coming up in the next hour because this is explosive, and yet, the fuse is just lit. It's not that down to the countdown where you suddenly think, oh, do we take a commercial break and come back and find out if everyone lives? Well, we'll hold it for the second hour, take a better look at it for you. President Biden is in Brussels, the NATO meeting, hastily called, and he's already offering some additional assistance to Ukraine. And first of all, he is offering $1 billion in aid to Ukraine. They need it. I'm not going to fight that issue. And he's also saying we will take 100,000 Ukrainians into the U.S., seeking asylum. Which, again, I have no problem with because that's the purpose of the asylum laws inside our immigration process. They are definitely facing a dire situation. In fact, the Mariupol deputy mayor says the residents are suffering from numerous Russian war crimes and genocide. Food and water supplies, 2 days or less, apparently, in some areas. But while Biden is doing this and willing to bring in 100,000 Ukrainians seeking asylum, is he going to do anything about our southern border? We continue to have illegals come across all the time. We may well have Ukrainians decide we're not going to wait for Biden and whatever they do. We'll just go ahead and get to Mexico and come across the southern border. Why not? It's open. Heritage expert James Carafano is going to join us in this hour. What Biden can do, should do in Brussels, and what can he do to make a bigger mess? That's my question. Zelensky is asking for more NATO help. And also, there's a Russian invasion update that suggests a Russian general's response indicates that morale is bad, 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 not just for the troops on the front line, but in Moscow. And yesterday, we will review the Supreme Court hearings of Judge Jackson. They do continue today, but I think the best happened yesterday. One, Senator Kennedy asking, when does life begin? She couldn't answer that. But the question from Senator Blackburn, Judge, can you define the word woman? Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
For years, I've told you, be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. That's because I know the excellent work Wellington does when it comes to making your home, your business, even hospitals safe. See, recently I asked Wellington to check a relative's home. The relative had been constantly sick. Doctors couldn't find a cause. I asked Tom Wellington, please check the house. After extensive testing, Wellington could rule out mold and other air and water toxins. Well, that was a major relief, and the negative results gave doctors added information. So when I encourage you to call Wellington, I mean it. Wellington, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the Better Business Bureau, Missouri and Illinois. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Today, Allied leaders called on China to refrain from supporting Russia's war effort. China must not provide economic or military support for the Russian invasion. Instead, Beijing should use its significant influence on Russia and promote an immediate peaceful resolution. Allies also agree that Belarus must stop acting as an accomplice to Putin's invasion.
Well, that's all well and good to be stated, but will it really be followed? That is the NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg today addressing member nations that gathered. That would include President Biden. As NATO came together to discuss, what do we do about the Russian invasion? Now, again, as you probably certainly are familiar and know by now, NATO could have brought in Ukraine previously, might still, but Putin was afraid they were going to do so. He did not want NATO and Western freedom democracy nations closer to him because Ukraine sits between Russia and Poland, which is the NATO member closest. And that's why he says he invaded. And he did it because he thought NATO was going to move and actually make Ukraine part of NATO. There are two issues that suddenly sparked this invasion that might have been diminished and might have snuffed them out and might have stopped the carnage we've seen. One, Biden and his reckless remarks that, well, if there's a minor incursion into Ukraine, well, that means we're opening the door a crack, or we're leaving a window unlocked if you want to come in. If that's the way I see it, I will guarantee you Putin saw that also. And then, of course, the issue that NATO, after days after the invasion started, said, well, putting Ukraine on the agenda, even on the agenda to be considered a NATO member, was never imminent. Why the hell didn't you say it then? Why did you kind of play coy about, well, we decide who comes in, we will make decisions? We all know that. Why didn't you go ahead and flat out say, we don't have any intention in the immediate time of making Ukraine part of NATO? Now, can I guarantee that that would have shut down the invasion plans of Putin? No, I can't, because he obviously has widespread intentions of restoring the old USSR. All of the countries that were part of the USSR that broke away with their independence, well, then he wants them back. Now, I remind you, of course, that when Ukraine was part of the USSR, they were basically, when it comes to nuclear weapons, they were the third largest nation, Ukraine, to have nuclear weapons, because the Russians had put most of their weaponry inside Ukraine, getting it closer to Poland and others to the west. To the extent that when Ukraine went to be independent, it had to give up its weapons. And the kicker to all of it is that Russia said, yes, we will help you dismantle them. The U.S. will help oversee it. And Russia saying, we will help protect you, Ukraine, from Western forces or any invaders. How ironic and sickening is that at this point against today's backdrop? So we have the NATO meeting underway now. Zelensky, by video, told those meeting for this NATO session, my country needs just a fraction of your combined firepower. He said, give us just 1% of what NATO could provide. We have been told numerous times that the U.S. has been sending in various pieces of equipment along with other nations. Some of it may have been delivered. Some of it may still be en route. And my question still goes back to the fact, when thousands of troops were amassing in Belarus, and Putin was still claiming, just a military exercise, pay no attention to what you see and hear, we're just up here playing war games. And apparently many of the Russian conscripts had the same idea. They thought, we're just here to carry out war games, not actual war. Because some of the communications that were intercepted or found on their cell phones when those troops were killed, messages back home, one saying, Mama, I didn't come here to fight war. I want back. I want to go back. So the morale among the troops at the front line has been bad anyway. It has not been the outstanding rollover Ukraine as Russia was expecting, and even General Milley saying that there's no doubt that they will have control of Kyiv within 72 hours. Kyiv some 2 hours south of the Ukraine-Belarus border. They still don't have Kyiv. Last I saw, they got some of the outskirts of Kyiv and then apparently got pushed back. And Ukraine's also claiming it destroyed one of the Russian military ships in a port on the Black Sea. And there's certainly a video of a ship blowing up and fire and everything else. Now, whether it was a mistake that Russia troops made are sabotaging it themselves because the morale has gotten so bad. There have been reports repeatedly that many of the Russian soldiers, they do not want to be shooting and firing on civilians. They don't want to shell a building housing women, children, babies. They don't want any part of that. And in cases where they have just abandoned their weapons, according to some of the Ukraine soldiers in the field, saying, we're finding the weapons just dropped as the Russian soldiers decided to leave, maybe try to get back home, maybe try to get a change of clothing and just kind of infiltrate deeper into Ukraine. Hopefully they don't get killed by other Russians, either by intent or by accident. James J. Carafano of the Heritage Foundation is going to join us later this hour. I want to get a better take from him on his perspective on how the war is going, but not so much that as what is Biden doing, should do, and should not do at this point. Now, you heard the NATO Secretary General state, China, stay out of this. Quit assisting and buying from Russia. Do not help with the invasion. And Russia, you should stop and pull back. Those are words. Will they really carry any weight? What we are seeing from Biden so far in the NATO meeting is that he does believe that Russia should be removed from the group of 20. He said that would be the G20 summit that would be coming up later. And he said either we take Russia out of it or we also allow Ukraine to be part of it. Zelensky, I don't know that he can even think that far ahead about, are we going to be part of G20, the nations of Europe and so forth, or even NATO. He just wants to try to survive and help his people survive at this time. But during a news conference at NATO headquarters in Brussels, Biden was asked by a reporter, sir, your deterrence didn't work. What makes you think Vladimir Putin will alter course based on any action you take today? Biden said, and I'm quoting, at least as it's reported, I did not say that. Sanctions never deter. You keep talking about that. Sanctions never deter. The maintenance of sanctions or the increasing pain and demonstration of why I asked for this NATO meeting today. We will sustain what we're doing, not just next month, the following month, but the remainder of this entire year. That's what will stop him. And so he's thinking about additional sanctions. And I've asked repeatedly, if you're going to use sanctions, it's one thing to put sanctions in place before the shooting starts and give them a clear indication that if the shooting starts, everything is brought to bear. But we have been under this administration doing it piecemeal, bit by bit by bit. And yet, despite all of this, the Ukrainians fighting heroically. Not just the men, the women that are in Ukraine. Either helping take care of the injured, or babies, or helping keep ammunition and supplies with the troops, or in some cases themselves, picking up rifles and shooting to kill Russians. And for the Russians who expected, we are Russia. It's just a farming community of Ukraine. We'll roll right over it. It's been a rude awakening. It's been a deadly bloodbath for many. And we've already heard numerous reports of morale so bad, that in some cases Russian troops might be puncturing their gas tanks so they will lose fuel, knowing logistically no fuel can be delivered, so the tanks and trucks are at a dead stop. But then CNN had a report that they picked up dealing with a meeting that took place, a meeting that outlined between Russia and some U.S. advisors as to what's going on. And in this meeting, something got revealed. And again, this is a rare face-to-face meeting between Russian and U.S. military officials last week. This is what happened.
As the meeting ended, the readout says an attaché on the U.S. side casually asked about Aline's family roots in Ukraine. According to the readout, the U.S. official said the general's stoic demeanor suddenly became flushed and agitated. Aline replied he was born in Ukraine and went to school in Donetsk, and then said, according to the readout, the situation in Ukraine is tragic, and I am very depressed over it, before walking out without shaking hands. The attaché wrote in the readout, the fire in his eyes and flustered demeanor left a chill down the spine. Meetings with Russian officials are typically scripted, but the two attachés said they had never witnessed such an outburst by Russian counterparts at an official meeting. The readout by the officials concludes, at the very least, it is clear that morale problems among Russian forces are not limited to frontline troops.
I grew up on an older road, a pedal to the metal, always did what I told. Until I found out that my brand new clothes are came secondhand from the rich kids next door. And I grew up fast, I guess I grew up mean. There's a thousand things inside my head I wish I ain't seen. And now I just wander through a real bad dream, feeling like I'm coming apart at the seams. But thank you, Jack Daniels, oh, number seven. Tennessee whiskey got me drinking in heaven. And
this is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Well, as you were listening to that last soundbite in the previous segment of that Russian general basically showing all of his emotion, he's from Ukraine originally, grew up in Ukraine, has family still in Ukraine. In a rare face-to-face meeting between Russian and U.S. military officials last week, yeah, although some of those meetings are continuing, one of the U.S. members just asked, how is your family? What have you heard from your family? And that's where the Russian general lost it and stormed out of the room, and obviously indicating he's not happy with what's going on. There's no report that he's been punished in any way by Putin, or will be. But it is indicative of, if there's bad morale at the front lines with the troops, there's also bad morale among the leadership. By the way, there's a Twitter account that's affiliated with Russian state media posting a video clip that supposedly shows Putin in a meeting with the head of his Ministry of Defense. Yesterday, it was reported they'd been missing, had not been seen since shortly after the invasion began. The Ministry of Defense just missing in action? No way to verify if this picture showing the Ministry of Defense leader meeting with Putin is recent, but it obviously is put out to show that, no, he's still alive. He has not been jailed or anything else because the invasion has stalled out. You know, we have had over recent years seen the efforts between Washington and Moscow when it comes to nuclear arms, all that cooperation unraveling. Both countries have walked away from several treaties to control nuke weapons. That included one that outlawed intermediate-range nuclear missiles that could threaten Europe. The only remaining nuclear pact is the new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, the new SALT, which limits deployed strategic weapons to 1,550 each. Biden and Putin agreed to that last year to extend it to 2026. It does not cover these smaller or battlefield nuclear weapons that each of us have. There was something at least 2,000 in Russian stockpiles, and there were reports that at least 100 might be missing out of Ukraine once the invasion started. These are suitcase-type nukes. You can hand carry them, put them on the back of a cart, whatever, put them in a trunk of a car, drive them somewhere, get them somewhere. They might kill 10,000 immediately and then, of course, leave radiation. So a lot of those are still there. And I'm looking at an article out of Politico talking about with those kinds of weapons still out there and the way the Russian invasion has been going, really raising questions about the possibility of the fog of war leading to something that neither really wants, but it happens. Longtime chair of the Armed Services Committee, Senator Sam Nunn, being quoted as saying, there's always been a chance of mistakes, but I think the chances are much higher. I think we're in a different era in terms of blunders. We might detect or believe that Russia is doing something big with nuclear weapons. They might interpret that we are. And before you know it, the fog of war has both sides activating nuclear weapons. I'll raise that issue among others with my guest coming up in just a few minutes, James J. Carafano with the Heritage Foundation, and get his take on Biden in NATO and what he's offering and what do we do to dial down the tensions? Can Biden do it or will he make it worse? Stand by.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Ackerman Toyota believes when you need service, you want genuine parts, certified mechanics, no hidden cost. You get all of that with Ackerman Toyota. Plus, if you're ready for a new car or pre-owned, see what Ackerman has on the lot or what's coming. Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. My guest we've had on numerous times before. Always glad to have him and his insight. James J. Carafano with Heritage, expert on international and U.S. affairs and security. James, welcome aboard again, sir.
Is this the greatest radio show on radio?
Yes, it is, sir, and you are now part of it. And that's what's making it the greatest.
Yeah, if anybody wants my opinion.
Yeah, I appreciate
really,
it.
Really, I'm not joking. You know, I love your show. I think you are a gem, and it really is just an honor to be on with you. But
I appreciate
that. And you didn't pay me, folks, I swear.
I appreciate that. And I mean that in all sincerity, because comments like that from people like you have gotten several times and from the public, and that's what's making this show bigger and bigger all the time. But let me begin with issues, and that is President Biden, of course, is in Brussels. And the way the White House poses it, he's there to lead the free world and hold Russia accountable for invading Ukraine, that over 24 hours of he's going to meet with the NATO summit, a gathering of the group of seven industrialized nations, a summit of the European Union, and all of this talk, blah, 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 everything's going to be resolved or better. Your take.
Well, I hope that that's all true, because we all want our president to be successful and
yes.
to protect American interests. I must say, so far, I still kind of see the bystander in chief. I mean, it doesn't even look like leading from behind. It looks like I am willing to do what everybody wants to do, and then claim that that's leading, but it's not leading. I mean, I think that the really look. I mean, I think there are easy issues, and I think those are easies to be dealt with. Should we keep supplying Ukraine? Absolutely. Should we give them even more? Absolutely. Okay, that's done. And then are there red lines here? Well, of course there are. You attack NATO territory, we're not going to stand by and watch that. If you use chemical and biological weapons, there are no biological weapons that we know of.
Right.
Chemical and nuclear weapons, are you going to pay a price for that? Absolutely. Does it mean that NATO will get engaged? Probably not, unless it occurs on NATO territory. I'm almost willing to bet that that's where the red line is. Okay, so it just took you and I about 5 seconds to get those things ironed out. The real issues are, where do we go from here? And it's, you know, the Russian army has demonstrated that it's very good at least two things. One is killing a lot of innocent people, and the other one is blowing up a lot of lives and livelihood. As long as that military is in being, and it can always be reconstituted and rebuilt, and Putin is its leader, it is a military security threat to the West. And so the question is, how will NATO ensure that doesn't come to threaten us? And you know, there are two issues, which is we need to have strong defense. We need to do our part. European countries need to do their part. We need to have a forward defense in NATO, not a tripwire that says if you cross this line and kill somebody, we'll get mad. But if you cross this line, we will kill all those people who cross that line.
In other words, be more than just words of deterrence of what will happen. Be right. Ready to impose it and carry it out. Let me break down some of what you said. First of all, the NATO general today, Secretary General, told basically China, stay out of this. Get away, quit helping, agitating, and supporting Russia, and then for Russia to withdraw. Well, again, that's going to fall on deaf ears for the most part. You raised the point about Biden and what he's doing. He is now pledging $1 billion additional aid to Ukraine and supposedly going to take in 100,000 asylum seekers from Ukraine, which is part of our immigration process as opposed to crossing the border illegally. That we accept, and I'm all for it. And a recent Fox poll shows by a 63-32% margin, voters think we should be doing more for Ukraine in their fight against Russia. And among that means more economic sanctions, not providing, or rather, and then provide additional military equipment to Ukraine, so forth and so on. I keep going back to, and I have to ask you, Jim, in your opinion, did we blow it when Biden was not as stern to begin with, as opposed to saying, well, if there's a minor incursion, we can kind of, you know, look away?
Oh, I absolutely think, look, I think the history will show, and if we ever get access to Russian documents that will confirm this, that if the President of the United States had insisted that, and the NATO leaders had agreed that we do what we're doing now 9 months ago, which means 9 months ago we had flooded Ukraine with military assistance and food and medical supplies so they could withstand an invasion, and we had hammered and isolated the Russian leader for merely threatening to invade an innocent country, that this would have never happened.
I agree.
That he
would
have been.
Yeah. I mean, and now sending it in now, of course, does make it look like we're more complicit. But we had all this time while the troops were gathering in Belarus. We could have been putting in planes and all that stuff then before any shot was fired.
But there's no do-overs in history. I get that. We are where we are, and it's good that NATO's doing what it's doing. But NATO has to answer the questions, which is how do we do with the Putin threat long-term? Because that is a threat to ours. And as you pointed out, it's not just Russia. China wants a weakened and divided and distracted Europe that where it can be dominated, and it can further isolate the United States. So this is also about the dealing with China. And how do you take the Russia off the table? Well, one is you have the military capability to deter them. That's one. And the other is you deal with the energy, which is that we all have sufficient, reliable, abundant energy that's not dependent on Russia. And that's going to primarily that the number one thing that's going to come through is rapid increase in American domestic production. And then for the Europeans to have sensible energy policies, the Europeans have tons of natural gas that they haven't exploited because because mostly because of green
climate.
Groups.
Yeah, I mean, but Germany's reopening their coal mines, realizing we better do something because Nord Stream 2 is definitely not going to go online. Nord Stream 1 is still supplying from Russia direct into Europe. Nord Stream 1 is still supplying fuel energy needs for Europe.
We can't have our families starve and freeze to death, and in America should have to look at $7 at the gas pump. But the answer to that is responsible energy. Everybody wants to save the planet. This net zero thing is ridiculous, and it's saying, well, we're going to rely on renewables, which, look, if renewables would solve the problem, we would have all bought them. I mean, they're a piece, but they're not going to solve the energy problem. And net zero is never going to happen, and it's not, and we don't need net zero to save the planet. So we need reliable energy. So Europe has shale gas. Europe has gas fields in the ocean. Europe has alternatives. And yeah, okay, we wish we had those yesterday so we could all stop buying Russian oil. But, you know, the day that we all start doing that stuff, reopening Keystone XL, you know, drilling, that's one day closer to weaning ourselves off of Russian gas.
And the other side of that is every day we wait just makes us more dependent and the situation tighter. There's a piece in Politico today talking about how many strategic arms, nuclear weapons each side has, that the Biden and Putin re-signed it back last year to extend it through 2026, the new SALT treaty. But in the fog of war and the miscommunications, anything can happen at this point.
Look, I don't think anything can happen because I do think the old rules apply, which is countries with nuclear weapons are really reluctant to directly confront each other because they're not, you can never be confident that you can keep off that escalation ladder and just stop where you want. This was the lesson of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Matter of fact, even India and Pakistan, once they got nuclear weapons and they went to war with each other, they quickly realized that they can't do that anymore. And the one thing that has happened is since India and Pakistan have had nuclear weapons, they've never had a ground war against each other because they learned the rules, which is you cannot think that you can control escalation once it started. There's plenty of historical examples for this where, you know, in Vietnam and Korea, where the one thing we didn't do was go after each other, because if we knew if that started, you didn't know where it was going to end. I think those rules still apply.
I hope
they
you're right.
Apply to the Russians,
and I hope the fog of war doesn't cause an accident. In the last 30, 40 seconds here, what can Biden do that can just make things worse while he's at NATO or here?
I don't think he's going to make things worse because of the bravery of the Ukrainian people, they're not going to collapse in a New York minute, which means the NATO is going to continue to support them. I don't think Putin can escalate this thing in a way without endangering his own regime. So I don't think there's a lot of harm that Biden can do, but this isn't solving the problem long term. I mean, when this is over, we have to address the core issues that made Russia a threat. Biden has demonstrated no leadership to do that. That's the problem.
You're right. James J. Carafano with the Heritage Foundation, thank you for joining the greatest radio show in the nation. I appreciate you being with us. We'll do it again. He was rushing on. The man has so many demands on his time. I'm glad we got him. Coming up, a crime-ridden city and no relief in sight.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
If you want to impress someone, I personally recommend Cafe Napoli, Clayton, our town and country, or St. Charles. Cafe Napoli offers private rooms for up to 50 guests. So plan a corporate party, an anniversary party, a birthday party, a party party. Cafe Napoli has a location near you, Clayton, Town and Country, and St. Charles, where Cafe Napoli 3 is now serving lunch or Sunday brunch, only at Cafe Napoli 3 in St. Charles.
Never would have hitchhiked to Birmingham if it hadn't been for love. Never would have called the train to Louisiana if it hadn't been for love. Never would have run through the blinding rain without $1 to my name if it hadn't been for love. Never would have seen the trouble that I'm in if it hadn't been for love.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, of course, they're wrapping up the confirmation hearings anyway for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to be the next Supreme Court justice, a liberal, to replace Justice Breyer, who retired. And Biden said he was going to pick a black woman to fill the spot, which we're going to review that in the next hour. One of the most bizarre questions posed to her yesterday that she could not answer. I want to spend some more time on that because it's on one hand funny, at the other side of it, it just concerns me so deeply that this kind of attitude exists. We'll get into that in the next hour. But what we are seeing is, of course, that some of the Democrats have been upset, even though we did not attack her personally in any way. I say we, the conservatives being represented, the Republicans serving on the Judiciary Committee, did not attack her personally. They went simply with her record. They did not accuse her of, like the Democrats did with Brett Kavanaugh, alleging attempted rape and serial rape. It's nothing like that. I mean, you say, well, she's never been accused of it. Well, neither had Kavanaugh until suddenly they decided to come up with it. And they didn't really try to make her religion a possible threat to her making good judgment, as Democrats did with Amy Coney Barrett. But the thing she does have to answer for, because she's going to be on the Supreme Court, and that's crime. A coalition of conservative advocates sent a letter to GOP Senator Susan Collins of Maine, urging her to vote against confirming Judge Jackson, saying, "We urge you to reject her nomination as her views on crime are deeply disturbing, outside the mainstream of judicial philosophy and legal guidelines." Now, of course, to that point, it's been raised that she had been extremely lenient on porn, child porn. If someone had it, she was indicating, well, you know, now we have computers, it's easy to get it, so you're just collecting it, that's okay. But then you add to it, and she would even tell some of those she was sentencing, you know, that's why the crime is there and it's happening, because you're encouraging it. But then she would give them even less than federal guidelines would set if she had the opportunity, and less than the prosecutor would want. Crime is one of those big things, again, Democrats that are trying to push a progressive agenda don't want you to remember when you go to the polls in November for the midterm election, nor any other election. And some of it, though, can't be ignored. It's right in your face. Dateline Seattle. The Seattle Police Department's 2021 year-end crime report showing a 20% increase in violent crime, reaching the highest levels in 14 years. Has been doing that for months in Seattle. A bakery owner had to shut down her business, saying it's too dangerous. She's a Russian-born baker. She was providing handcrafted traditional Russian pastries, has been in the Seattle area since 1992. But near her store, she said, we've had shootings. A man rammed his car into a federal building, firing a rifle. A boy was shot and killed by someone who just wanted to do it. Days earlier, another man killed near an Amazon office building. And she said, and now we've got drug problems everywhere. When COVID came, she said, a lot of us either stayed home, businesses were shuttered. Then once we came back, the homeless had taken over the downtown area, the criminal activity. We've ended up, after a year of lockdowns, dealing with people selling drugs, buying drugs, using drugs in broad daylight. She has pictures, video. showing dozens of individuals smoking, injecting drugs on the sidewalk just outside her shop. Amazon has also announced it's going to temporarily relocate 1,800 workers from its office at 3rd Avenue and Pine Street in downtown Seattle. They're afraid to have their workers come in. Well, the Seattle Police Department set up a mobile precinct along 3rd Avenue, but they're struggling with attrition. 225 officers going away over the last 2 years, 225, plus the city council, the woke city council, cutting $7 million from the police department budget. In fact, the budget has been cut by $36 million over the last 3 years. Crime is not just the Seattle problem. It's your problem, your neighborhood. You might be safe and good now. Now. You need to keep all of that in mind when you are voting. You don't have to be a Democrat to be afraid of some thugs running through your neighborhood, or a Republican. You have to just be a concerned citizen. And we need to put a stop to it. Coming up in the next hour, the question from yesterday's SCOTUS hearing.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.